This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Lisa Sherwin-Wolf, who is the Director of Federal Marketing at SolarWinds, and Monica Make, Vice President of Client Services and the Executive Editor of FedPulse at Market Connections. Hey, guys. Welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to start with Lisa, because you haven't been here before. So tell people a little bit about your background and what you do at SolarWind.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here. I am the Director of Federal Marketing at SolarWinds, and there I'm responsible for all the aspects of federal marketing to U.S. government worldwide, including product marketing management, sales development, and inbound lead qualification, as well as our international government expansion. We've been expanding into national governments in Europe this year. I have a long background in working in technology marketing across a variety of areas, companies in the D.C. area like Software AG, RightNow Technologies, and others.
And GovWin.
And yes, and GovWin. How could I forget that? GovWin and Deltek.
That's actually how I met you, Lisa.
That is true. We partnered on some research there as well.
Yes, exactly.
And Monica, you've been here before, but maybe some people haven't heard you or I can't imagine people not knowing Market Connections, but I guess it happens.
Well, we hope the whole world knows about us, Mark.
Well, at least the federal world.
So Market Connections is a custom primary market research firm. We work with a lot of government contractors and specialize in the federal space. And we help companies understand their market position, how they're perceived by the market, how they're perceived relative to their competitors. And one of the key services that has been growing for us is thought leadership research. So we work with Lisa Sherwin-Wolf and her team to develop thought leadership research that is then turned into whole thought leadership campaigns. So we do the research, use that to inform the message development and the strategy, and put together assets that our clients then put into the marketplace. So things like white papers, case studies, infographics, and webinars are some of the assets that come out of that thought leadership research.
Okay, cool. And if you haven't picked up on this by now, the topic of today's show will be thought leadership, subject matter expertise, and the role that content plays in this. For those who have not read my stuff or heard me speak, I use a lot of Market Connections materials in my workshops, in my articles, in both the books dealing with the government market. It's gone back 10, 11 years now for some of the market research studies that have been made public. But in 2012 especially, there was one slide that I have used perpetually ever since that showed that companies that employ thought leadership / content materials have a significantly higher win rate. Monica, start with that, and then talk a little bit about some of the studies you guys have done over the past 4 years or so.
Sure, Mark. The study you're referring to is the 2012 Government Contractor Study. We released that in June of 2012, and we asked government contractors about everything from their business development activities and strategies to their marketing spending and marketing activities. So within the marketing activities, we asked in general about the use of primary market research, and about half of government contractors told us at the time that they were using primary market research for thought leadership purposes. And as you said, very interestingly, 61% of government contractors told us that they were using thought leadership materials as part of their marketing mix. And companies with higher win rates had a greater tendency to use thought leadership materials. So those companies are able to tie back the investment into thought leadership activities to win rates and more opportunities in the marketplace.
Okay, we'll talk about exactly what those thought leadership activities are in somewhat more detail, but talk a little bit more, if you will, about the studies. This is not the only study, obviously, that you do. So some of the studies, especially, you know, you have one that will be made public this fall. Give us the breadth and depth here, and maybe people will grasp why I use it so much.
All right, Mark. So as you mentioned, coming up on October 1st, we're going to be releasing the 7th Annual Federal Media and Marketing Study. So we've been doing this for nearly a decade, and it's a broad survey of the federal marketplace focused on the use of different types of information sources, news and information. So we look at publications, websites, TV news, radio. Where do government decision makers go to get information? So coming up this year, we are going to look at a lot of the things that we've looked at in past years, but we also have a few new data points to share. For example, we've asked people about their level of trust in different types of materials. So what we're finding is that the most trusted content is actually white papers and case studies, and that's followed by webinars. So this is helping to demonstrate the value of the activities that contractors are placing quite a bit of investment and time into, and activities that dovetail beautifully with thought leadership activities, which I know Lisa's going to tell us more about what she's been doing for SolarWinds and how she's using these kinds of materials as part of her strategy.
Well, the intriguing thing there is these are not always the most overall popular information sources for the feds, but that, you know, we're talking quantity versus quality here. When it comes down to the decision makers, you need those white papers, those case studies, and when we're talking about webinars here, we're not talking about slapping something together with PowerPoint and having some hired voice come in and do it. You've got to have some real value here. It's not a sales platform. It's an educational platform.
That's absolutely correct, Mark. In March of this year, we released the Federal Content Marketing Review, which did exactly what you're talking about. We went a little bit deeper beyond just what people are using to get information, but looking at what they value and where they're going to get information specifically to inform the procurement process. And when we asked government about the top benefits of consuming digital content, they told us across the board, education, training, and information is what is most beneficial to them when they're consuming digital content. So 85% said that they go to digital content for hot topics and trends. 84% are looking for education, 83% for training, and 75% are looking for best practices. So that's what they consider most beneficial about digital content. And in addition to that, we asked them, what is the most valuable digital content to you? The types of content that are most valuable to inform and educate you during the procurement process. 69% said research reports, and that was the number one item. It was at the top of the list. That was closely followed by webinars at 68%, case studies at 65%, and white papers at 61%. So the government has now made a very strong case for us to continue making investments into thought leadership types of activities and educational and training type content.
Okay. So we have the content study that came out earlier this year. We have the marketing media study coming out later this year. So you guys are doing two big events a year now? Is that the gig?
Generally, we do two big events, and then we have some smaller pulse polls that come out. For example, a couple of years ago, we did a government events pulse poll where we took a look at how the government was obtaining information in lieu of event attendance. So we knew that because of austerity measures and some scandal within the government, that there were fewer people attending face-to-face events and fewer opportunities to attend face-to-face events. So we asked government, what are you doing to get information in lieu of those events? And we found that they were going online, consuming more digital content, and turning to each other to get some of that information. So in the Federal Content Marketing Review in 2015, we actually did a comparison between what people told us in 2013 and what they're telling us 2 years later in 2015. And we found that there was a significant increase in the use of webinars. In 2013, 55% of government was using webinars in lieu of events. In 2015, 73% going to webinars in lieu of events. 43% were having discussions with coworkers in 2013. In 2015, that's up to 69%. So interestingly, in 2013, they told us that they were concerned about collaboration and innovation being negatively affected by the inability to attend face-to-face events. But what we're seeing is that it has forced government to be a little bit more collaborative and rely on their colleagues within their agencies and in other agencies to get some of that information and training. And I think this all plays into the case for thought leadership because it presents an opportunity for contractors to be a part of the conversation, to influence it, to even lead the conversation. And then their clients in government are able to share that information. And in particular, the government feels that they are more likely to share online content if it includes valuable data points, thought-provoking ideas, and if it comes from an independent third party, such as a publication or a research provider. So that's why companies are going to publications and firms like Market Connections to help provide that independent third party view.
Okay, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. When we come back, we'll talk to Lisa Sherwin-Wolf about how she and Solar Winds are deploying some of these tactics. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Monica Make of Market Connections and Lisa Sherwin-Wolf of Solar Winds. You can find Lisa at solarwinds.com. You can find Monica at marketconnectionsinc.com. Lisa, let's talk a little bit about why, as a federal marketing person, why you think the subject matter expert platform thought leadership materials are necessary and how they're going to help SolarWinds.
Sure. Prior to joining SolarWinds, I had used market research working at Deltek and GovWin. Obviously, it was something I found important. For those of you not familiar with SolarWinds, we have a very broad product portfolio. We're an IT management and monitoring company. Our roots are in network management, but we also have products in systems management, security information and event management, and database performance. So it's a very broad and growing portfolio. And when I joined, I was a team of one. We've grown since then, but I wanted to look for ways that we could help increase market awareness with our customers and prospects on some of the areas they might not be familiar with us for, such as cybersecurity, the system side, even things like that. And wanted to do it in a way where it was impartial, third party, the research could benefit our audience, help us with insights as to where we could go in the market, and then translate that down into integrated marketing programs where we could use the content at events, trade shows, webinars, white papers, online awareness, blogs on third-party sites to extend the reach as much as we could.
Okay. So Monica mentioned that the three most trusted sources of information are white papers, case studies, and webinars. Are these areas that you are actively pursuing?
Yes, they are. In fact, when I saw that research come out, it made me smile because it made me have another reinforcement point besides the results as to what I'd been putting into our marketing programs. So I've always viewed white papers both at the top of the funnel, the early stage research, as well as a tool for sales when they're working with customers to justify a purchase, do additional information research, hand the information up to executives, and then webinars both for awareness, market research, but also we have deeply technical customers. So we use webinars as a way to reach our customers around the globe, take our user groups virtual, give technical content, access to our product management team and product experts, and then case studies. They help us with providing feedback and also help share information out with other customers about ways they might be able to use our products, things they might not have tried, interesting use cases.
Okay. So I have to assume then that these three in particular are going to be educational in nature, not salesy.
That is correct. I am a big fan of marketing through educational, informative content, not selling, providing information which helps those customers and prospects learn more about us and then come and talk to us and engage in that sales conversation.
Okay.
I call that deepening brand understanding. So instead of just saying, here's who we are and what we do, you demonstrate your knowledge and your expertise. Mm-hmm. And that helps companies or your customers not just be aware of you, but understand what you offer and how you can help them.
Okay. You also, like several others in your position, sell direct and indirect. So you're a channel player, you leverage integrators, and you sell direct. So do you allow your partners to leverage your content?
Yes, we do. I usually reserve new content that's very significant, like our market connections research, where I use it myself for a limited period of time. And then after our initial rollout, we share that content with partners and resellers for them to use in their campaigns.
Okay.
I think it's important to put that content out there for easy access.
So if a VAR wanted to leverage your white papers, could they access your white papers in the selling process for them?
Yes, they could. We have a very strong partner program. Mm-hmm. And so our channel partner person works very closely with marketing, and we provide those partners email campaigns, assets, white papers, work with them to develop custom content, whatever they need to help educate their base as well.
Okay. Any?
Lisa, you and I have talked about how you've been able to leverage your assets for a long period of time. Can you walk us through what the typical cycle is and how you leverage everything over that period of time and what you get out of it?
Sure. It's a little bit unusual, but what we've been doing as an approach is we'll put out the full market research results along with a press release, and then we work with Speakerbox, our PR firm, and Market Connections to roll out that information, look for press coverage. We do bylined article posts, and then we stagger out after that and have Market Connections co-present with one of our subject matter experts on a webinar. And then we also leverage infographics. So we really look at traditional press coverage, social media awareness, what are assets we can be pushing out for free, what's content that we can have people register for because it is of more substance, really deep information to benefit them. In all honesty, we did our first cybersecurity study a year and almost, it'll be 2 years ago this winter. Mm-hmm. We just had someone pick it up and write an article about it.
From the first one?
From the first one. And we released.
So this is eight, nine months later? Okay.
It's over a year. It's a year and 9 months. And then we released this year's cybersecurity survey in January. And we've been continuing to get press coverage. We've had several publications that picked up stats for stories that they were publishing this summer. So the life
are the
is
stats still valid?
I think they are.
Yeah, because in the second round, we built upon what the initial study was. So yeah. Lisa has very strategically now built a name for SolarWinds related to sort of the baseline and the ongoing evolution of cybersecurity concerns within the government, especially insider threats. That's been a big angle that we've focused on. And so then that gives us the platform to be able to talk about tools that are available to help address those threats. Within the content, we don't name any tools by their brand name, but we demonstrate SolarWinds' expertise and understanding of the challenges and how to solve those problems.
Okay, so that's very similar to the approach that FedTech takes, the CDW publication. They do articles that educate people, but very rarely are they talking about a specific technology in the article. So let's talk about that for a minute. Why is it important not to play name brand in those pieces?
For me, It's about engaging with information that's relevant. And I want them to see what is happening in cybersecurity, what is happening with shadow IT or mobile technology. What are those trends? What are those things happening in the market that drive a need for certain technologies? My company provides technologies that deliver excellent, affordable results in those areas. But the best way for me as a marketer to engage with that audience in a way that's relevant to them, I feel, is putting it out there from a more vendor neutral, leveraging third party research. This isn't something where I went out and there can be a concern that I maybe skewed the results. We went with Market Connections intentionally to have it be, it's blind, it's third party. They don't know who the vendor is when they're answering the questions, to really give us a pulse as to what's happening, as well as share that information with the federal government.
Cool.
And when we put out a report or a white paper, it's co-branded. It's the Market Connections brand is primary on there because SolarWinds and a lot of our other clients want to retain the independence of having a third party. So we turn to SolarWinds or a client to be the subject matter expert to help inform what those research results mean and how they can be applied within your federal agency. And SolarWinds branding is present, but it is not the lead on all of those materials. So we really try to preserve that independent third-party validation.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower because nobody else volunteered. My guests are Lisa Sherwin-Wolf of SolarWinds and Monica Make of Market Connections. And I want to take a little deeper dive into what's the value, overall value for a company, not simply to position itself as a subject matter expert, but to have those subject matter experts on board, in-house, and also highlighted. So, Lisa, you have a fairly decent stable of relatively intelligent people, I hear.
I have a very big stable of very intelligent people. I was very lucky when I joined SolarWinds that we have what we call head geeks. So we have a team of people whose jobs are to create content, write content, speak at events, engage with our customers in a very funny, informative, credible way. And then one of the things
did you say funny?
Yes.
So they inject geek humor here.
They really do. If you visit THWACK off the SolarWinds.com website, we have these monthly programs called SolarWinds Labs, and you will see them there in lab coats. And I believe there were some Mexican sombreros during the taping in early May, right around Cinco de Mayo. But they inject some humor into technology. And then one of the things I wanted to build after I joined was that federal specific expertise as well. So I've been very lucky in that both within my team, with my sales engineering team, my public sector management, as well as our senior leadership, our CTO and CIO, Joe Dolce, is one of my key external speakers and writers, along with Ed Bender on our sales engineering team, my boss, David Kimball, our group VP of federal and national government, where they all participate in speaking engagements, blogging, getting that word out within the community. They're huge.
So is this like flying Southwest? Everybody gets, you know, information out, but it's kind of fun to listen to.
It is. And we're able to tie it in with other activities that we have going on from a marketing perspective, industry events that we may be participating in, seasonality within the industry, so that we can tie it into our overall marketing program, as well as putting out really fun, informative content.
Now, was the humor there prior to you?
Oh, yes.
That was just icing on the cake.
That was
for
just
you, then.
Icing on the cake, a little bit of humor. But
see, and way too often, that's something our market lacks.
Yes, our market does tend to take itself very seriously.
Well, I don't.
You're leading the charge, Mark.
Well,
you know, we found when we're developing thought leadership materials and content that it is especially important to have the subject matter experts and people from the sales organization involved in the development of that content. And I find it makes for much more well-rounded, valuable content, because your salespeople and your subject matter experts are probably going to be more on the ground with the government customer far more often than the marketing folks. And so by themselves, the marketing folks don't necessarily have that 360 view of what the research means, what the challenge is for the government customer, and how it can be applied to solving problems. So when you bring in the salespeople and you bring in the subject matter experts, you can really develop a fuller story that is more meaningful and more educational for your customer. And I have had the interesting experience on more than one occasion where a subject matter expert has started out being very skeptical about the whole process. We're going to do this research. We're going to develop white papers and infographics. And I can just hear them rolling their eyes on the other end of the phone when we have the kickoff call. And I went to an event recently where a subject matter expert had been involved in a project with us, and then he presented at this event. And I spoke with him afterwards, and he said, "I'm a believer. You've converted me. I was very skeptical at first, and now I'm so excited. I can't wait to go to my customers and show them the infographics and share the white paper with them and be able to say to them, you don't have to just take my word for it. I have all this data to back up the position that we're sharing." And in fact, at SolarWinds, one of the subject matter experts that you work with gave me a similar story. He's like, "Oh, my clients love it when I bring them these infographics and this white paper. It, you know, it helps to illustrate the point. It's a little bit whimsical. It's not the, you know, typical run of the mill. White papers are no longer what they originally were. You know, a very boring technical document. They're much more interesting now. And especially when you can bring in a case study and a story about a government customer that has successfully solved a problem using the technologies that you're talking about in the materials.
Okay. So let's take a little bit deeper dive into the other side of this equation and talk about the thought leader tools / tactics. So we know about the white papers, the case studies, the webinars, but number one, not everybody knows how to use them. Not everybody knows that, you know, what's available. So in more than one of the studies, you run down a list of all of the information sharing tools. So let's go there for a few minutes, if you will.
Sure, Mark. So the government told us that the most valuable digital content for them is research reports, webinars, case studies, and white papers. And one of the challenges we have is that government contractors are placing a priority on different activities. So the top priority of government contractors is marketing collateral. So government says research reports are most valuable. Contractors are focused on developing marketing collateral. So this is a problem. We have some gaps here. The other thing I see when we talk about benefits, so we ask government, what are the benefits of consuming this digital content? And they've told us education, training, staying current on hot topics, trends, and best practices. And yet when you ask contractors, what are the benefits of creating and providing this kind of content? They are not seeing the value in providing education and training types of content. So we have some gaps and some opportunities to close those gaps. Companies like SolarWinds are doing it right. You're taking that educational approach and you're trying to share information that helps your customers understand what the problem is and how they can solve it. And I also think that the individual thought leaders are a big piece of that. Lisa has successfully leveraged some of those folks that she named earlier in the media for interviews. And when you arm those individuals with data and information that demonstrates your knowledge of trends and best practices, I think it really helps with the media influence and pickup. Would you agree, Lisa?
Definitely. I was stunned this year by the breadth and depth of pickup. We actually, our cybersecurity research was quoted in a Gartner research report earlier this year, which was a first for us, talking about cybersecurity and
cyber threats. It's always nice to be quoted in a report. It's better to be in the top right quadrant of one of the cubes. But
that is true.
And how many media hits did you have on the cybersecurity study this year, roundabout?
I think I stopped counting at 30, and that didn't include articles that we bylined and authored ourselves and placed in publications.
And it did include some national publications that were not specific to federal, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So I think that's a huge win for you when you're starting to see coverage and interest outside of just the federal marketplace. And then you also had internal interest that you expanded into your European market as well.
Yes, we did, which is terrific since I'm now expanding into the European market as well. And that helped reinforce our looking at from a government perspective, looking to take that research more global in the future, because I think it's really beneficial when you can look at information and survey where you can give some comparison and contrast between different countries' government and different regions within the world to see what is happening in each area, what are best practices that we might learn from other countries.
So fill us in on, I know it was Germany, but I don't really know the background on what, how they came to want to use the research and the materials.
Oh, it was very interesting. Our corporate team in Germany, there's been a lot of interest as well as some breaches this year in the news within the German IT market and within the German government space. So they came and said, can we translate your content to German? We'd like to use it in our market. So they translated the infographic and other content and put that out and had some pickup, some coverage, and a number of byline blog posts. So they were able to leverage that content in region. And we had some pickup and interest within the UK as well, and some mainstream media, as well as some IT publications that was unexpected.
Doesn't
this
hurt
year.
When you're a multinational seller anyway. So
definitely not.
But so the information about what was going on in the US federal government was of interest in other foreign government markets.
That's correct.
Okay. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about not simply the production of content, but the dissemination of content. So you're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guests again, Lisa Sherwin-Wolf of Solar Winds, solarwinds.com, that's Solar Winds plural, and Monica Make of Market Connections Inc. .com. And let's talk a little bit about the dissemination of information. I've been reading a lot about best times to post, et cetera, and everything points for B2B for midweek. So I experiment a lot. I did a fairly significant post for my Government Market Master program this past Friday, and I promoted it Friday night and Saturday. And over the weekend, we picked up more than 300 views, which is pretty significant for my blog. This wasn't posted on LinkedIn this time. This was posted on my blog. So let's talk about the sharing attributes here. You have a ton of content out there. Not all of it's going to be specific to everyone that you serve, but bits and pieces of it will be very targeted for specific audiences that you do serve. How do you get the word out?
We use a variety of different tactics and tools. I have a LinkedIn page for government that we use to share unique to government content. And then SolarWinds has your traditional social media channels that you could expect, our Twitter handle, Facebook, Instagram. So we pick the content that we think is most relevant to a broad audience, things that we really want to make sure everyone is aware of, and we put those out through the main SolarWinds channels. We leverage SlideShare, we leverage our own personal Twitter handles, putting it out through our networks. And then we have a user community, Thwack, that we put content out within as well and repurpose and repost within there.
How active is your user community?
It's extremely active. I don't have stats, but it's extremely robust. I know I was just taking a peek, and we have a post on DISA STIGS and our Login Event Manager product, and it had over 10,000 views since it published. It's a longer life piece. It's been out since 2011, mm-hmm. but we have a pretty active, engaged reading community, and I have that same set of subject matter experts, those product managers and product marketers, who are putting fresh content out there probably daily and weekly to give people a reason to come back.
Okay.
Does that then breed people buying more products? So they may come to you with an initial product and then start buying more products because they are engaged in your user community and deepening their understanding of who you are and what you do?
I would hope so. That's one of the reasons we launched our federal user group here in the DC area and online my first year. We've now done it 3 years in a row, expanded to Austin. We're going to expand to Europe. We have found that exposing people to other products and our experts and that information and sharing it socially as well as in person has definitely helped with customer adoption and also of using products they already have. We want our customers to get the most out of what they've bought from us. I mean, the government market, it's changed dramatically over the years. We serve a lot of military and defense customers as well as civilian agencies, and we want them to be able to get the maximum value of what they're using.
Okay. What value do you find in pushing through Instagram?
To be honest, for me in government marketing, I have not used that as actively. My corporate team mostly is using it to share pictures from trade shows, events, things that they're at, to just have another way. They've been doing some short vines, things like that, pushing out content where we're already out at another location and have something very visual to show.
Okay, because I find the same thing with Twitter in that, you know, I use Twitter, but it's a push mechanism for me. It's not a communications, two-way communications tool. But I find that the audiences there are generally media and possibly some of the thought leaders. But the people who are buying IT aren't on Twitter.
I see some, but I mostly see them reading. I don't see them engaging with us, but I may meet someone who says, oh, I saw on Twitter you were going to be here at this conference and I made a point of coming by to see you. But I wouldn't know that unless they mentioned it because there wasn't a retweet. There wasn't a link click that we could see. So it's much less trackable.
I think it does help with media coverage, though, because it helps to disseminate that you've been covered. And then that builds your credibility.
Yeah. Any media coverage, I always encourage my clients, you got to tweet this thing. And then, you know, if it's germane, post it in specific groups on LinkedIn, but don't do blanket posting. Mm-hmm. So pick the venues. So what do you find, is it better to share as it occurs, or are you using tools that share it for you, or some combination of the above?
I'm a little old-fashioned, and for the most part, I tend to share it as it occurs. There are some things that I have where it's repeat content, and I do want to put it out multiple times. I may schedule that more of an informative post, like our infographic. I want to make sure it goes in a time zone convenient to Asia Pacific. So I might pre-schedule that so that I'm not making sure I'm at my computer at 9 o'clock at night. But for the most part, I'm very real-time. I'm putting it on LinkedIn or on Twitter because it happened just now. The publication just published it, or I think this is really timely because I read this other article in the news about smart card and that being an issue. So I'm going to reshare a post about how to configure smart cards in our product just because it's the right time.
Lisa brings up a really important point, and that's relevance. So when you are very engaged with and close to your market and understanding what is relevant to them and resonant with them at a given time, you can develop content and share it, and it will be better received because it will be perceived as relevant and resonant with their challenges and what they're dealing with in their day-to-day jobs.
Yeah, and you can do that with, you know, more on the content curation side. When news breaks, post it and comment on it, or have your subject matter experts comment on it, preferably in a not so light manner, depending on the, you know, what news is breaking. But, you know, not all the content has to be yours.
Yeah. We do something on our blog, FedPulse, called rapid response posts. So we're paying attention to what's going on in the news. And whenever a topic is covered that we have some sort of research that we can comment on, we will, you know, pull up that research, the report, an infographic, whatever it may be, and leverage what's in the news against what we have in our archives. And archives are not necessarily, you know, they don't necessarily go back many, many years, because of course you want your research data to be fresh, but we can go back a year or two sometimes if nothing new has been published and say, you know, we saw this in the news and here's some data that supports or refutes that point is.
If it's evergreen data, I mean, you know, some webinars are good for long periods of time. Some information is good until new research shows that it's somewhat dated. Mm-hmm. So final thoughts, start with you, go to Lisa then. So,
all right. Well, Mark, we were talking about distribution methods. And so I just want to remind everyone that print is not dead. Publications are still important. What we find in the Federal Media and Marketing Study is that people want equal access to print and digital. So we see digital pulling just slightly ahead, but print is still in the mix. People want their content to be easily shareable. They want it to include valuable data points. They're not afraid of thought-provoking ideas, and they like for it to come from an independent third party. So anytime you can get that third party validation, it should improve the value of what you're putting out there. And that third party validation can come from a client that's, you know, helping you demonstrate a case study. It can come from a publication, an association, or your market research data.
Cool. Lisa.
I just have a little bit of advice for people who might be thinking about how they can integrate thought leadership, market research, content into their marketing programs. I think one of the reasons our approach has been successful and some of the other companies that I've seen have been successful is it's not just about what you want to achieve as a company. You need to take a step back and look at how is this going to benefit my government customers? How is this going to benefit people I may not be working with? And what can I be doing with content in the space that can reach both those goals? And most of us are not huge teams. We're small, we don't have huge budgets, so look for things that can have a little bit of a long life, you can reuse in multiple formats. If the content is meaty and informative enough, you can do things like what we've done, and you can use it for presentations at events, customer briefings, trade show booths, blogs, white papers. You can pull different pieces of information out to tell different stories if you structure the approach to how you're doing your research from the start, knowing that that's your end intent.
Cool. Thank you both for joining me again. My guests today have been Lisa Sherwin-Wolf of Solar Winds and Monica Make of Market Connections. This is not my day job. Over the last 31 years, I have accumulated a knowledge base of marketing to the government that is second to none. I say that unashamedly. My Government Market Master program provides continuing professional education for marketing and business development professionals in the market. Full details are on my blog at federaldirect.net. And I thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.